Beyond the Lamplight both starts and ends this podcast.
Yes, they do.
Indeed. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Those Rules Don't Apply to Us. My name is Mackenzie Makinich, and this is
Andy Gates.
We are back again. We are going to talk a little bit more about Pearl Jam and some other things that happened on the big week that we were talking about previously in the last episode. And the last one, we talked all about Pearl Jam night number one for the home shows, which happened on August 8th and 10th in 2018. If you didn't happen to hear that, we advise you to encourage you to go back and listen to that episode. There's a lot of useful information, we think, and especially for helping you to get into shows like maybe the upcoming Pearl Jam shows that are coming and whatnot. But there was so much to talk about with that one. We were even getting tired of hearing our own voices and was like, maybe we should cut this off and break it into two parts. So we're going to continue on with that and talk about the second show. And before we even get to the second show, Wednesday night was the first show. And like we mentioned in the previous episode, like that was just this insane week.
Long day, too.
Yeah, long day. That Thursday night, I was tired all day during the day. I think I actually did work on that Thursday, which I did very little work that week. But then that Thursday night, I went out and saw a band that's unfortunately not around anymore, but they're called the Stereo Embers. I saw them at the Tractor, and that had, Danny Newcomb was on the bill with them, but then also Stereo Embers, and the reason I'm bringing this up is Tim DeJulio was in that band. And if you don't know who Tim DeJulio is, please look him up as well, because we like to shout out excellence. And he's a good friend of Mike McCready. He's been playing with him for years, like when they did their Flight to Mars thing, which would happen a lot. Tim usually gets tapped for that. Tim just got tapped recently to be with Duff McKagan on his new album, and they went and played Jimmy Kimmel Live, I think, just a few weeks ago. They were on TV. So, you know, we know Tim. He's a shredder. That was just part of the shredding week, watching him get to melt my face off, and I took some cool photos from that, which was you know, a day off. But, of course, I went to a show. So here we came around another show. You didn't go to that one with me, by the way, to the Tractor. But
I have responsibilities this week. I'm now T minus like 72 hours before dropping the oldest one off for college.
Yeah.
And I go to a lot of shows, but a common refrain for me is you can't see them all.
But damn, do we try.
I'm going to try my fucking hardest.
Yes. So it was, so next came up Friday. It's Pearl Jam time again. We've already done the merch, all that stuff. If I remember, I think we didn't get down in line quite as early on the second day.
Correct. I went down there with you and hung out because, you know, I'm kind of nuts and have a whole lot better to do. I didn't have floor seats to that show.
Yeah, because I took my cousin with me to that one. And I want to say we got in line noon or so. It wasn't nearly as early as you and I did.
Yeah, I hung out with you guys. I remember we were in sort of a similar spot, probably same distance back in entry, if I recall correctly. Mm-hmm. You know, we went over, we scoped some merch, might have bought some more, you know, because the posters were different days. So I don't recall, but I do know I have like three or four of those freaking posters. That's for sure.
Yeah. And it's basically just the same, you know, rinse and repeat process. It's just, you know, they open the gates at 5, blah, blah, blah. I think they actually did open the roof early this time because somebody must have tipped them off. Like, hey, people were practically suffocating down there. And then they thought, hey, let's open up the roof on a nice, hot, sunny day. Ooh. And so they did. They opened up the roof and they hooked us up with that. Like I said, I was there with my cousin for this one. I think it started about the same. One thing of note is for both shows, they had no openers. Pearl Jam is notorious for having openers a lot, but for these, they didn't. And, you know, they were long shows. Like,
right.
I couldn't have handled another half hour, 45 minutes, hour of another opener on top of these. I mean,
I could have. A Cheap Trick, you know, would have been cool.
I mean, it depends, man. Like that first night was 3 hours. That's a lot. And yeah. So anyway, but that's not how it happened.
Me, my experience was now I'm kind of looking for a ticket solo, which in some ways it's easier. You don't have to worry about a second person. In other ways, you know. So for me, if you know me, 2016, I went on, best way I can describe it, a punk rock cruise. The band Flogging Molly rents out a full-size cruise ship annually, and then they sell it cabins, and it's going to be 3-4 days, and they bring about, I don't know, 15 to 20 bands on the boat, and it's fantastic. There's bands playing from about 5 p.m. till 2 a.m. every day, and I went there because Larynas Flask was playing, and I did not know what I was in for, but I can say with absolute certainty that going on that first cruise changed my life, changed it for the better. I had the honor and pleasure of meeting the greatest collection of humans I've ever had the pleasure of meeting. Their family now. And it just so happens on one of the Facebook groups, a shipmate, I didn't know who he was. Someone was reaching out, hey, I'm going to Pearl Jam. I have an extra ticket. I didn't want to go. And I reached out, and it turned out to be my friend Adam Sinkowitz. Still friends to this day. Seats for that one, 100 level, probably stage right, a section or so in front of the stage. You know, and we spent that show together. It was actually nice not standing for all those hours. Wouldn't have complained if I was down there, but it just wasn't in the cards for me that night.
For most of it, I think you did make your way down.
Towards the end, yeah.
Yeah. You came down with us for a while. I do remember that.
Yeah, I mean, because those rules don't apply to me.
Yeah. Which won't even tell how you got down there. You just did. It's all that matters. Yeah, it happened. Another solid set list from the second night. You know, Footsteps, Nothing Man, Why Go Home. Interstellar Overdrive by Pink Floyd. A pretty rad cover. Rats, which was interesting.
That's an interesting song to pull off live.
Yeah. You know, a little of the faster paced stuff, like off of Vitalogy, they played Whipping. An interesting one, a curveball. I don't think they'd ever played it before, was they did a Chris Cornell cover. It was called Missing. And, you know, of course, they had to talk about that. And they, you know, gave their shout out to Chris. And it just kind of brought in all the feelings. And, you know, they don't talk about him a ton, you know, at their shows. And even Eddie's fairly quiet about it in interviews or whatnot. But the history between those two goes back very, very deep. And so that was a touching moment for sure. Yeah. You know, they did play some other songs they played the night before. They played Immortality the second night, which is another song that I really love and a good one to sing along with. Some of the newer stuff, like, you know, Can't Deny Me and those. And then they ended with Porch once again, just like they did with the first night. And you just can't go wrong with that. I mean, Porch is it's a Pearl Jam staple. And we were there for all of it. To start off the second night, it's like, okay, they're going to play another, you know, Jack White song, or what are they going to do? No, Eddie comes out this time with the first encore, and he sits down solo acoustic. And he talked about how he missed his friend Tom Petty, who had passed away not all that long ago. Back then, it was probably maybe a year, I guess. And Tom was a good friend of his, and he told like a really sweet story about them. And he's like, you know, if it's okay, he's like, I'd like to talk everybody to do this and sing this with me. And he goes, he had everybody in the entire place light up their cell phones. And he's saying, "Oh, I won't back down," solo acoustic, and he dedicated to Tom Petty. And man, that's just another one of those moments of I have both nights on CD. I was able to go get them, and I have that. And when I listen back and hear that one, it just takes me to that place. I'll never forget it, of him dedicating that. But then you look out and all around us, because we're pretty close to the stage, you see 50,000 people all holding up that light like that. You know, it was kind of a somewhat newer tactic back then. It still wasn't the holding up a lighter days, but now that happens a lot at shows, of like the holding up the light kind of a thing.
I've seen a different sort of spin on that. I do believe it's Frank Turner that's doing it. I could be wrong. He asked people to get their phones out, turn their lights on, and don't shine the light at the stage. Shine it backwards. Imagine sitting in the very last row and seeing that.
Oh, okay.
You get to see all of it. Wherever you're sitting, you get to see everybody in front of you.
That's cool.
It's different. And that's the thing. It's different. It was like, wow, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
Just a different play on the, you know, similar thing. I really like it. Just one life in a world that keeps on pushing me around. I'll stand my ground and I won't back down. Hey, baby.
I was down closer on the first night in the fourth row. I thought Eddie sounded great, actually, both nights. You know, like his voice hadn't...
He didn't blow it out.
No, it didn't blow it out. A little different from an experience that I think you had a few years later at one of the Ohana nights.
Tale for a different day.
Yeah, tale for a different day. This podcast is already long enough. Let's see, they played Better Man. Oh, they played Crown of Thorns, you know, giving some tribute to Mother Love Bone, which was a pretty nice moment. It's a broken kind of feeling. So let the time into the ceiling. Bad moves are coming, but I say then, oh boy, did it kick out. Kick out the jams, and they brought out Kim Thayil from Soundgarden to blast that one out with them. And man, that was another adrenaline, just a boost. Fuck yeah, here we go.
Well, then for me, you mean you go into Spin the Black Circle again. These, you know, the face melting rockers with Eddie just going after it.
Yeah.
I mean, into that. And then, you know, ending that first encore. It's funny to say first encore. Not a whole lot of bands do multiple encores, but then in the rearview mirror, and that's, again, it's another fast one, and it's another one that everybody is singing at the top of their voice to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fuck it. I got goosebumps again, damn it.
And we'll save everyone the torture by us trying to sing that. Like, it's, you can come experience that with us at a show, but we won't do that.
You don't want to stand behind us.
Encore number two, they start throwing in Paint It Black a little bit with from the Rolling Stones, and then that blends into Crazy Mary, one of their own songs. And then another one of my, you know, favorites from the first album, Jeremy. And that's where you get to see Jeff play like the big bass that he does on that. And that kicked into Drop the Leash, that kicked into Search and Destroy, but they just Iggy and the Stooges cover, and then they brought out Mark Arm and Kim Thayil for that one. Mark Arm from Mudhoney. And those guys stayed out, and they played Sonic Reducer after that. Don't need no coming around. And by this point, they were well past the 3 hour mark from the night before. And it's veering towards midnight.
And I would think it's time to pull out some long songs.
We're sitting here like, how much longer is this going to go? Like, while we're thinking about that, at the same time, we're like, I don't want this to ever end. And, you know, eventually it had to end. You know, song number 34 on the list was Alive. They played that again. They played Bob O'Reilly by The Who because Eddie Vedder seemingly always wanted to be The Who. And so they're I was a little disappointed, if I'm being real, if they ended with Yellow Ledbetter. You know, I was hoping that they would have ended with something maybe a little different. I'm not going to complain about
Yellow Ledbetter. You just wanted Eruption.
Actually, I don't even remember what it was. There was something else I was hoping they would end with, but no complaints, 0%. Another one of those shows that when that was over, there's a photo I'll post it later where I'm kind of like doing like the Pearl Jam stick figure pose. Just my arms are out and you know, if anybody was near me, that was not pleasant for them because I was sweating like a pig the entire day. I stunk, my feet hurt, I was starving, I was thirsty, and I was in one of the happiest moments I've ever had in my life. Like,
got it. Understood.
There for one of my favorite bands. We just completed two whole nights. I'm there with my best friend. I'm there with, you know, my cousin who I love dearly and all these new friends that I've met. And that to me is what a Pearl Jam experience is like. And anything less, I kind of don't want it. You know, as we said before, it's like, I don't want to sit up in the nosebleeds and I don't want those other things. Like, I want that feeling like that where I feel like I'm on I don't know what fentanyl high is like, but some kind of a speed, crazy, cracked out high afterwards. I want that.
You're thinking meth.
Whatever. All the stuff. And that's what I chase. And that's what Pearl Jam does for me. And that's why I go to those shows. And as we said in the previous episode for these upcoming shows, I will replicate that.
We're going to do it again.
The experience will be different, but I'll be up there for those. And you can... You know, you can take that to the bank. We'll probably talk about it again in a future show. It'd actually be wild if we went and recorded one after we left one of those shows. It'd be terrible. We should record it just to hear what it sounds like because we'd be like, that's the greatest thing I've ever experienced ever.
Well, we should bring a computer to the show and we should, you know, record some of it while we're waiting in that fucking line for 9 hours because what the hell else do we have to do?
Yeah.
Going through the turnstiles.
And interview people
and we're really good at audio, so think of how good the recording of their set would be.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got the audio nailed. Yeah.
Idiots.
Yeah. Hey there, another quick editor's note. One thing, well, Andy just mentioned, yes, that we are idiots, and I can't argue that part at all. And for another example of that, one thing that we completely forgot to mention with recording both of these podcasts about the Pearl Jam shows in 2018 was they did a really massive fundraiser for the homelessness issue that is very rampant in Seattle. And we had to give a mention of that. It's reported that about 90% of the $11 million that they raised during those shows was donated to about 40 local organizations aiming to tackle homelessness in Seattle. It's still a big issue, but, you know, not a lot of bands do things like that. So found it very important to give a mention about that and props and a thank you. I swore to myself and made a promise, which I shouldn't have done, that I was going to chill the whole weekend because Jack White was coming up on Monday. And I was like, I need some goddamn rest. I am about dying. So, you know, those words didn't apply to me, I suppose, because the next day was the Sub Pop 30th anniversary party, which was happening over on Alki Beach in West Seattle.
So this is the other one I give a shit missing, and I'll chime in when it's appropriate. Continue.
Yeah. I really wasn't planning on going to it, and then I was just texting with my friend Kelly, and she's like, oh, you got to come to this. I mean, it was free, you know, Mudhoney was playing, lots of other bands. And I thought, it's the 30th anniversary. When am I going to have this opportunity? I should go. And I did. And I was very tired, but I plowed through it. I got to see Mudhoney, which I'd never actually seen Mudhoney before. But ironically, that was my first time. The real kicker for me, for sure, was seeing Metz. M-E-T-Z, a band that I absolutely love.
I'm betting a lot of y'all have never heard them before, but we randomly, I think, saw them. I think it was during the first, what the hell was it?
Upstream Paul, Fest.
Upstream Fest. Yeah, yeah, we just had to be walking by and all, oh my God, it was a three-piece.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, we're just walking by. I'm getting goosebumps again about freaking Mets. So that's why I'm angry about missing this one, because I didn't get to go to this one. A three-piece that is just getting after it. Sonically, physically, it's just this trip you go on. This sonic trip that I don't get that from a whole lot of bands, but this is them.
Yeah.
It's like, buckle me in. I'm all in.
They're kind of like the punk parts of Nirvana, but they take it to another level with a weird sonic, like you're going to freak out, like panic music.
Yeah, like more melody, not so hardcore distortion. I mean, fuck. I love that. All right, I'm done.
Yeah. So I was up in the front row for that because, of course, I was. It was so goddamn loud. I even had my good earplugs in, and even that was loud for my ear being close to that. Once I experienced that, I was like, okay, I was very happy I was there for that. I didn't stay for much more. I don't even remember who else was on that bill, but I kind of didn't care. That was really what I was there for. That Sunday, I did actually rest. I slept. I have it in my notes that I did not go see anything. For Monday, though, again, the artist.
It's all over again.
The artist that I've mentioned before that sits on a pedestal above Pearl Jam for me, Jack White, was in town, and my cousin came with me to this one, and then her sister, my other cousin, actually flew in from Chicago for this, and the three of us, we all had tickets, and I think we were actually down there a little earlier than you. We just kind of saved a spot, because you weren't there as early as Megan and I were.
My fucking back hurt. Holy shit, sitting on concrete again for Jack White? Oh, no.
Yeah, so this one was at the WAMU Theater. You know, just right next door, outside all day. Once again, very different than the Pearl Jam experience. Like when I say all day for that one, I would be shocked if we were in line before 1 p.m. or noon or something. Not quite the same experience either. You know, people just kind of kept to themselves. It didn't have the communal feel that like Pearl Jam did for.
It's not a home show for Jack White.
Yeah.
You know, people weren't traveling the globe. It was like he was playing for the Seattle audience.
Mm-hmm. It was a tour show, you know, that was just his stop. And for Jack, this was he was on tour for the Boarding House Reach album, which was kind of like his weird album. Well, before we even get to that, about what the show was actually like.
I have a photo of me laying on the damn concrete outside of WAMU, taking at 2:38 p.m. So, yeah, we weren't there hella early.
So a couple of things for this one, just getting into the place. WAMU has a very dumb policy when in regards to letting people in. So you basically line up and you just, you know, just single formation line all day long. You've got your spot. And then what they do is they open like about 6 or 8 different metal detector things. And they just say, okay, everybody at them, you know, that's kind of how it is. And like, they don't care. Someone who had been in the back or who's just walking up could just walk right up into that thing. So people have been outside all day, don't necessarily get those front spots. And then it's kind of the same thing. You scan through and you go. And my point to that is like, you could have been in the front the entire day and you might not be all the way up in the front of the rail, depending on what spot you got when they do the lineup for you to go through the metal detectors and then how fast you were able to run to get in there. The other hang up with that is then as soon as you scan through and get through the metal detectors, which I absolutely support metal detectors being at all shows. I wish the government funded it for every fucking show everywhere in the world, including tiny venues. It's ridiculous that this is not a thing at all music venues. Off my high horse on that.
You have a chance of losing your party going through these turnstiles at different times, and you get through and, you know, the other person scanning their ticket. And I'm just saying it ends up being some unnecessary chaos.
Yeah, it's kind of a clusterfuck. And then after that, another way you can lose people though is because for Jack White shows, he has a policy to where it's a no cell phone show, which means that after you come through, you have to take your phone and you have to put it like in this indestructible pouch, whatever it's made of.
A lock back,
and then you lock it up and then you get to keep that. You know, you can't get access to your phone. When you're in the show, if you do need to make an emergency call or something, they do have a spot where you can go. It's kind of like a break area, so to speak, and you can go and they'll unlock it for you and then you can make a phone call. A couple of things to that. I mean, if somebody really wanted to, they could probably say, I don't have a cell phone, and, you know, just not take it out of their pocket. If you get caught at the shows, there is security watching, and if you get caught taking a photo, they will kick you out of the venue, so there's that. I noticed that when I was in the show, I just happened to tug on mine just to, out of curiosity because I was bored to see how indestructible they were. It wasn't very at all. I was actually able to open it very easily, and during the performance, I thought about, I like taking photos at shows, especially because my memory's not always the greatest, and I'm good at taking concert photos. And I thought about taking some photos at that show, even though I had gotten it open. But I was like, you know what? I'm not going to do it. Like, this is what he asked. I think I'll be respectful to the artist. And I left it in my pocket the whole night. I didn't take any photos. We ended up getting to the second row for that show. You did come up with me and my cousins for that. And you stayed for a while. And this is where your rant begins.
No, it's not a rant. This one was... You know, a mutual friend of ours, Elena, she showed up at the show and she was going to go for seats and she was going to go back there alone. I'm not a huge Jack White fan. I appreciate his talent. You know, he's a savant. He's fucking nuts. But, you know, he does put out some good damn music. And it was more important to me to go hang out with Elena than to be up front for Jack White. There was no extra special sauce for me being up front for Jack White.
Well, and like you said, like he said before, like he plays too loud. And that is true.
It is unnecessarily loud at a Jack White show. I mean, seriously. I've got tinnitus. I've got hearing loss to listen to music. Mm. And this guy, I mean, I think he wants you to feel it in your fucking kidneys.
He does.
Which is unnecessarily loud for today. I mean, I get it. If he wants to lose his hearing, fine. Turn your in-ears up. Mm. Jesus Christ, just turn the PA system down a little bit.
I agree to that. He is way too loud. I've seen Jack White probably a minimum 15 times through all the inclinations over the years. He plays loud rock and roll. So I knew that. I always have my earplugs set. I feel sorry for people who are there without earplugs. They absolutely probably withstand permanent hearing damage if you're at the front row of one of his shows and you don't have anything in. Like,
and to your point, I mean, you and I mean, we go to a ton of shows. We've worked with bands and stuff. I mean, I've got the earplugs molded to my ear with the different discs you can put in there to block more or less noise. Mm-hmm. I got the full blocks in and it's still too goddamn loud.
Yeah. Oh, and I'm going to shout to that, too, because I have this conversation all the time, and I just talked to a couple artists the other night. There is no reason for any artist who performs in the Seattle area to not have good quality earplugs. There's an organization called Smash, SMASH, that will literally get them for you free, the custom molded ones to fit to your ears.
Fair.
It's ridiculous.
No, it is, and it's... You know, they don't last forever. You know, sometimes the mold, you know, changes and whatnot, gets a little warped and stuff. I'll buy another pair every damn time. I think I'm on my second set of these molded ones. Quite honestly, I usually don't leave home without them. But if I do leave home without them, there are always those crappy, cheap foam earplugs sitting in the glove box of my car.
Mm-hmm.
I take my hearing seriously now because I've lost some of it. And right now, the loudest sound in the room is the tinnitus in my right ear.
Well, so back to the Jack White show. Again, for me, this hits all cylinders for me. It's one of my favorites. I'd never miss him when he comes to town. I always want to be as close as I can. He played some of the new songs off of, like I said, the little bit weirder album, Boarding House Reach. But he played, and he does this at his Jack White solo shows, tons of White Stripes songs. He played White Stripes songs. He played Dead Weather songs. He played stuff from his solo stuff. He played Rock and Tour songs, like Lazaretto, as far as like some of his other stuff in Love Interruption. He played old White Stripes stuff like Dead Leaves in the Dirty Ground, Hotel Yorba. This is all pleasure points for me. This is, you know, Hardest Button to Button, all the stuff. One, though, that was really cool, and we kind of wondered, like, well, since Eddie gave a shout-out to him and played a song, I wonder if he would do something, and Jack did. He played, they played Daughter, which was neat. He'd never played that before. Editor's note, disclaimer here, this is just a shitty bootleg that I found online. It's the only version I could find because Jack White does not allow phones at his show. So Jack, if you're listening to this, I did not take this with my phone. Please don't ban me from your shows or your life or whatever. Gave a shout out and said, you know, thank you, Pearl Jam, and all that, just as a nod of a commencement. Because both those bands are good friends, and Pearl Jam has actually recorded some songs down at Jack White's studio in Nashville. And I remember like the day that that was announced, it got announced like the day of this was happening in Nashville, and it was like noon. And I went and I like went to the airlines and looked, and I thought, can I physically make it? If I catch the next plane to Nashville to there in time to get to that show, whether I have a ticket or not, but it wasn't even physically possible. But I would have loved to have been there for that. Jack played a long blazer. You know, he doesn't play as long as Pearl Jam and those bands do. He played for, I don't know, two and a half hours. And he did, it looks here, about 22 songs that night, which is nothing to shake at. You know, that's a lot of songs. Yeah, Rack and Tour songs, Broken Boy Soldier. He started off the second set with Steady As She Goes. And this is another one, man. Like, if you could have an opportunity to actually see and hear Jack White play Seven Nation Army live, and there's probably a lot of folks, well, not a lot, but there's probably some folks listening on here that they don't even know that they know that song. You know, because the theme to Seven Nation Army is sung and chanted at stadiums all over the world, and mostly at soccer stadiums.
You hear Seven Nation Army more often than you see Taylor Swift at NFL games. And I'm not knocking Taylor Swift. Not in the slightest bit.
That is true. Yeah, I guess you would hear that more. Of course, there's only how many games in a season. And oh, but you're talking about how many times she's shown on the screen during a game.
Ever.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Time. Yeah, I think Jack wins with that. See, she can't beat everybody. She beat the 49ers, but she didn't beat Jack White. Jack White wins on that one. Big and enormous moment. You know, if I get to hear Seven Nation Army, that makes me happy. Hits all the pleasure points. He's one of my favorites. And it wasn't my favorite Jack White performance, if I'm being real. I've seen others. I think actually when he was in town 2 years ago, that Seattle show was good. But when I got to see him in Denver that year, that's probably my favorite ever solo Jack White show that I ever got to see, partially because our friends in DLO3 got to open for him. And so anyway, so that's how that week capped off. Seven Nation Army ended with Jack White, which ended that entire week-long thing of, if you're a fan of the guitar like myself, I saw six mind-bending, face-melting shows of guitar that I don't think that'll ever be replicated ever again. Like, I'll never experience anything like that ever again. And that goes up as what I think, like I said before, is probably the greatest week of music, of rock and roll I can ever remember that I've had. And I sure hope that I can top it, but I doubt it.
It's always the goal.
Yeah, it really is. Anything more to talk about on those shows or Pearl Jam or any of the stuff?
No, I don't think so. Like I say, I was a little bit, you know, limited in my availability that week. And like I say, really the Mets, that's the only one I gave a shit about missing.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever will happen to them?
Oh, they're still around. I just saw them at Numo's like a year or two ago. So they're around. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again, METZ, go check that. Go look into those guys and see them live. It's but bring your earplugs.
Will do.
Yeah. I think that was it. That's that was our big week of Pearl Jam, and I hope you all go see Pearl Jam at these upcoming shows. Just do it. If you're like, oh, I don't want to spend the money, go have a life experience.
And we will say that if you get, let's just say, floor tickets or pit tickets at face value, there are a couple of guys who would gladly take them off your hands.
That is correct. Yeah. Yeah. Especially if you have backstage access, we'll definitely take that off your hands as well. And Andy will even buy you a beer.
Done.
Done. All right. Take care. Thanks, folks.
Peace out.
And that's the podcast.
That was so white.
Intermission is coming to a close. Better run back to your seat. We've been biding our time, looking for a